Hi, Greg Perry, the historic preservationist. Welcome to season 3, episode 59. Today, I want to talk about a restoration of a museum here on the East Coast in Delaware. And I liken it to a small Versailles. And it's Namur. It's French in style, and it's American at heart. A little more than 100 years ago, after Alfred I. DuPont built his monumental tribute to his family's ancestry, its restoration has fulfilled his vision as a place for the public will find more beautiful time as it passes. So just recently gone under restoration and just recently opened to the public. So I took a few clock groups through here. It's an absolute gem. A lot of horology in here, a lot of great French furniture, and a very, very unique piece of architecture with great gardens just off of I-95 in just outside of Wilmington, Delaware. So in 2005, midway through a tour of the gardens surrounding the Namur's mansion, Charles Birnbaum, a fellow of the American Society of Landscape Architects and president of the Cultural Landscape Foundation, exclaimed, "Why have I never heard of this place? Why indeed?" In 1913, Town and Country magazine called Namur one of the purest examples of French architecture to be found in America, and made a particular point of praising the house for having restraint without undue formality. The next year, the Spur magazine said, "The furnishings and decorations combine the delicacy of French treatment with compelling comfort generally associated with English homes." More recently, a guide to Delaware architecture described the estate simply as spectacular. The house and gardens opened to the public as a museum in 1977. But for 31 years, Namur's slumbered as one of the best-kept secrets in what is known as Delaware's Chateau Country. Birnbaum was not alone in being unaware of its existence. That began to change somewhere in 2008 as the estate emerged from the last phase of a comprehensive restoration. Carey and Hastings designed Namur's in 1909 for Alfred I. DuPont, one of the three cousins who were the principal shareholders in the DuPont Company. Alfred was the oldest male in a three-generation line of oldest sons of the founder of the company, and he was devoted both to the firm and to the family's French heritage. His alliance to the firm made him rich, and his fidelity to his heritage led him to choose the top Beaux-Arts firm in the country when he decided to build a new house here. He also chose to give the house a name weighted with family history, Namur. And for no one knows, Namur is a very small town just south of Paris, about 85 miles, that was represented in the first French parliament by the family patriarch, Pierre Samuel DuPont Namur. And while in France, my time in France in the early 2000s, I was lucky to have a acquaintance in Paris who had a summer house in the small town. And one morning, I saw it so quaint as coming in around 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. It felt really, really well. So I wanted to get up early in the morning. I got up at 6 and I strolled through the town, and I had no idea that Pierre Samuel DuPont, there was a very, very small plaque, maybe 12 by 12 inches on the side of a building, a very obscure, almost townhouse-ish type stone building. And I knew where the DuPonts came from. And, somewhat seated in the tri-state area of New Jersey, Delaware, and Pennsylvania, you know, the word DuPont and Namur and regards to hospitals and other things always rings a bell. So for that morning, it was a very, a lot of mist around, and it was almost a magical morning when I found that. And it felt almost like being at home. But So Thomas Hastings was the principal designer of the firm, and the work at Namur's is credited to him. Any experienced architect will tell you that the most successful buildings represent a collaboration between architect and client. And nowhere is that more important than the design of houses. But nevertheless, experienced as he was, Thomas Hastings probably got more of a partner in Alfred DuPont than he originally wanted. One major point in which DuPont got his way was the selection of a builder. After receiving from Karen Hastings a list of contractors thought capable of undertaking such a large project in the early 1900s, DuPont informed them that he had chosen James M. Smith of Wilmington, a man unknown to any of the architects and who had never undertaken a project as large or complex as Namur. Furthermore, DuPont told them that he had sealed the deal with a handshake and had no contract. The big city architects may have been dismayed by such small town ways, but Smith remained on the scene at Namur for more than a decade, skillfully managing a nearly continuous stream of projects on the estate. Hastings may not have known what to make of DuPont's involvement in the early stages of their relationship, which actually lasted until Hastings' death in 1929. But as the two worked and reworked the estate, they became very close friends. In fact, in 1926, Hastings jokingly proposed to DuPont, "I would like to take you into the firm of Karen Hastings. I would play second fiddle even to you." Interesting, huh? But the construction of the 47,000 square foot, 7-7 room mansion was finished in less than 2 years. But work on the gardens continued until the DuPont's death in 1935. Karen Hastings was not DuPont's first choice for designing the gardens. Originally, he approached Herman W. Merkel of the New York Zoological Society about developing a landscape plan for Namur. He soon discovered, however, that Hastings felt strongly that the architect should always have control of the design of the surroundings of his own building. We have a very characteristic name for this portion of the composition. We call it the sauce of architecture. What Thomas Hastings created, with considerable help from his client, was utterly unlike anything ever before seen in the Brandywine Valley. Namur marked a dramatic break with the DuPont family tradition of expanding and remodeling old houses that had been in the family for generations. To this day, it is still the grandest house ever built in the state of Delaware. When DuPont died in 1935, his will specified that his third wife, Jessie Ball DuPont, was to have a life interest in the estate. Following her death, the will decreed Namur was to be maintained for the pleasure and benefit of the public, it being my particular desire that this memorial to this great-great-grandfather and to my father be not permitted to deteriorate, but that it shall consistently become more beautiful and attractive to those who view it as time passes. Jessie DuPont died in 1970, and the estate opened to the public 7 years later. Overshadowed by nearby DuPont estates such as Winterthur and Longwood Gardens, Namur struggled to establish his place within the rich cultural community of the Brandywine Valley. It even struggled to find its place within the Namur Foundation, which, in addition to the House Museum, also operates the Alfred I. DuPont Hospital for Children and a major pediatric health care clinic in four states. In 2005, however, the directors of the Namur Foundation charted a new course for the estate when they hired Mary W. DiNatale of John Milner Architects in Chads Ford, Pennsylvania, and Wilmington, Delaware landscape architect Rodney Robinson to undertake a comprehensive restoration of the house and gardens. After reviewing the condition of the 24 historic buildings on the property and nearly 60 acres of formal gardens, the first decision the team made was to limit the first phase of the project to the house itself and the garden features stretching from the front door to the Temple of Love, a quarter-mile-long swath that represents the primary visitor experience at Namur. The second decision was to set the period of the restoration very loosely to the mid-20th century. This allowed for the full restoration of the house Alfred built while keeping the changes Jessie DuPont made during her long residency. Aesthetically, the building was in good shape, but its infrastructure was woefully out of date. Wiring dated to the 1910s, heating and air conditioning systems in the 1970s, and the entire basement required new waterproofing. The gardens were another story indeed. They looked their age. Plants can die and have a bad week, and trees a century old can come back down with one great windstorm, and water features can wear away under the slow drip of time. Before any work was undertaken, however, the entire contents of the house had to be packed and moved into off-site storage. Namur has a particularly large inventory of items, more than 110,000 pieces, ranging from Jessie DuPont's chamois nail buffers to a portrait of Maria, Duchess of Gloucester, by Sir Joshua Reynolds, another 5 months it took, and 49 truckloads to move everything out of the house. While Dedaldi and the other architects began selective demolition to better understand the construction and condition of the building, Robinson and his firm of landscape architects began analyzing soil and scouring archives for old lists of planted plants and trees and other materials. At the same time, Frank S. Welch of Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania, began paint analysis, and John Carr of Milner and Carr Conservation of Philadelphia began a conditions assessment of outside sculpture, ironwork, and interior woodwork. One project that all agreed was essential to the final product was the regilding of Achievement, an Art Deco statue by Henri Crenet of a man and woman that stands in the center of the maize garden. At nearly 20 feet tall and standing in the center of a 10-foot-high basin of red lavender marble, Achievement is a bold statement of the happiness DuPont found in his third marriage. Originally covered in 23¾-carat gold leaf, which lasted for nearly 50 years, the statue was coated with bronze powder paint in the 1980s, unfortunately. So while deciding to regild it may sound extravagant, in fact, between 1980 and 2005, the statue had to be repainted 4 times, each coating lasting only about 6 years. So if the new gold leaf endures for almost a half a century, as the original application did, the savings in future scaffolding cost alone would have been covered by the expense of this project. A second signature project of the restoration was recreating the 54 lace panels that covered the windows on the first floor reception rooms. The first set was bought in 1911 by the Altman Department Store, and a second set was bought in 1929 from Alois Klein of Carlsbad, Czechoslovakia. By 2005, the oft-repaired Klein panels had reached the end of their useful life. On the advice of John R. Burroughs, historical design merchant in Rockland, Massachusetts, Morton Young and Borland Textiles Group of Ayrshire, Scotland, was hired to reproduce the lace. In order to achieve the desired appearance, the new lace was woven as 2 separate pieces on 2 different looms, 8-point and a 14-point. 22 different motifs were copied this way. The third hallmark project that distinguishes the Namur collection and restoration was the rebuilding of the reflecting pool rowboat. We know this from historic photographs that the DuPonts kept a 15-foot-long Whitehall rowboat in an 800,000-gallon pool. Alfred believes strongly in staying fit, and the estate abounds in stylish facilities for doing so. The rowboat was just one of them. The incongruity of keeping a rowboat in the middle of an element French garden probably also appealed to his sense of humor. When Jonathan Minot of Island Falls Canoe Company in Atkinson, Maine, recreated the White Hall, he helped breathe life back into the estate. Finally, after all the studies were done, new wiring was pulled, walls were repainted, fire suppression, heating, air conditioning, and alarm systems were installed, and the basement was waterproof. Ceiling, wall, and table light fixtures were upgraded. New copper gutters and leaders were installed, and chimneys capped. Iron statues, gates, and grills were repaired and repainted. Marble statues and fountains were cleaned, and fountain water quality was improved. The soil was amended. Plants were replaced. Retaining walls were disassembled and rebuilt. And historic landscape patterns were recreated. For a total of 3 years and about $36.8 million later, the restoration team achieved their goal, accomplished Alfred's vision of Namur becoming more beautiful as the time passes. 101 years after it first occupied, Namur's mansion and gardens was found in place in its cultural life in the Brandywine Valley. Again, it's the new kid on the block. Welcome back, Namur. Greg Perry, the historic preservationist, signing off. Thanks for listening.